BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
So on Saturday night, the Heisman Trophy was awarded to Travis Hunter of Colorado. And the voting results came out, and I can't say I was surprised because I thought there were two really good candidates in this year's field, so to speak. Ashton Gentry was on the top of my ballot. Travis Hunter also made the ballot. So did Dylan Gabriel at Oregon. And so now you know where I stand. But what did you make of the award? What did you make of the voting? Before we move all the way on from what happened over the weekend, let's deal with it in the opening segment. Is Travis Hunter really the best player in college football this season? Or does he just sort of fit the criteria that we have come to expect when voting on the Heisman Trophy? Ashton Gentry did not make some ballots. I wondered, as I look at the regional breakdown, if those voters were just anti-group of five, ignorant, or up to something else. And if Gentry plays at Colorado, does he win the thing going away? And if he plays at Colorado, are the Buffaloes sitting right now with a first-round bye in the playoff? Are they like a undefeated Colorado team or a one-loss Colorado team? I don't know. It's supposed to be subjective. There were more than 900 votes, 900 ballots that were cast. I was one of them. I think it was 903. And I'm also confused by the 25 voters who did not cast a ballot. 928 ballots went out, 903 came back. So 25 people went, I don't know. I don't want to do it. I don't care. Or they forgot. Ashton Gentry, Travis Hunter, what did you make of the weekend? Let's start there at 503-417-7575. John Mateer, Washington State's quarterback or former quarterback in the transfer portal officially. And kind of a sad moment, I think, for Washington State fans. But also, Washington State had Cam Ward do this last year, so they kind of been through it. But I talked to some donors at Washington State over the weekend and late Friday about the package that they were putting together for Mateer. And it became evident to me that the donors were torn, that these longtime boosters of the Cougar Collective and Washington State football were really struggling with, you know, on one hand, John Mateer's got to do what's best for himself. He's had a great season at Washington State. He's going to get in the portal. He's exactly the kind of player that the portal's made for. Kid from Texas, goes to Pullman, has success passing the ball, has success running for touchdowns. He's a guy that early in the season people were going, he could be a Heisman candidate, and it just doesn't work out for him at Washington State. And now his offensive coordinator is hired away by Oklahoma. Big red flag goes up. And then John Mateer stays with his team and says, I'm going to continue to practice with my team. And then ultimately, he decides today he's going into the transfer portal. I am told that Auburn is dangling $1.5 million. I am also told that Auburn is outbid for John Mateer's services. And Washington State, bless the Cougar Collective, is running around going to every mom-and-pop business in Pullman going, what can you give to help keep John Mateer in Pullman? And all those businesses are going, well, we'll share a portion of proceeds from our coffee and we'll give him this and we'll do that. And they pieced together a package that they thought gave them a chance. Did they ever really have a chance? Or the minute Ben Arbuckle, the offensive coordinator, leaves to go to Oklahoma, is that kind of it as it pertains to the future of John Mateer? Because the boosters that I spoke with, they were torn. They said, on one hand, we love the kid. He's a great kid. We wish him nothing but success. And if he has life-changing money put in front of him as a 20-year-old kid, who am I to tell him not to take the money? He needs to go. He needs to go take it. And if it's $2 million or $3 million from some school, go get it, John Mateer. You're worth it.
And on the other hand, the same boosters were going, please stay. Stay in Pullman. Do what Ashton Jeanty did. Anybody else notice that? Jeanty among the finalists for the Heisman Trophy. And you go down the list of the finalists. Jeanty was recruited out of high school to Boise State. He's still with Boise State. Dylan Gabriel, multiple schools. Cam Ward, multiple schools. Travis Hunter, multiple schools. Cam Scataboo, multiple schools. You start to go down the list of the Heisman Trophy vote, and it's all guys who transferred, except Ashton Jeanty. Now, it was part of sort of the festivities of Saturday night. His mom is saying, hey, look, we're a military family. Our word is our bond. And Ashton Jeanty's saying, hey, I'm here to represent my school. I'm proud that I'm from a Group of Five school, and I'm here at the Downtown Athletic Club. And it's not lost on me either that if you look at Travis Hunter, who did not start at Colorado, and Cam Ward, who started at Incarnate Word, and Dylan Gabriel, who did not start at Oregon, and Cam Scataboo, who was at, what, was he at Sacramento State? You start to see a pattern of players who didn't start as, you know, in Travis Hunter's case, he was a five-star guy, but in those other cases, they didn't start as Heisman finalists. They were guys that some Division I schools didn't want. And great stories, Dylan Gabriel included, great story. But it was such a weird amalgam of feeling on Saturday night as the Heisman Trophy is being given away. There's a lot of hype and a hoopla going on. You got Coach Prime in the room. You've got Travis Hunter's mother saying, you know, he basically was unwanted. And look what happened. Weird moment. You've got, you know, this strange cast of characters in the room as it pertains, because the former Heisman winners themselves who were present at the Downtown Athletic Club are all sort of emblematic of what college athletics used to be. And yet these guys on the stage are cashing the checks and are very much representative of what college football is today. And yet amid that, you've got the idea that this Heisman Trophy ceremony itself has jumped the shark. That, you know, it's gone Fonzie and Happy Days 1977. It is on skis, jumping the shark, because you've got 11 postseason playoff games that have yet to be played, and we are handing out the award for the player who's had the best season. We don't know who's had the best season yet because there's so much ball left to play. I think the voters got it wrong. I thought it should have been Jeanty. But I'm not ignorant enough and selfish enough to say, oh, my ballot is the only one that counts. It's a vote for a reason. 503-417-7575. What did you make of it? And how much of Travis Hunter's win has to do with the hype machine of Colorado? Stephen Vaughn in studio. Stephen, what's going on, man?
Oh, nothing much, John. How was your weekend?
It was, well, I had a good weekend.
Good.
Thank you for asking that. It was a weird weekend, though, because we had this Army-Navy game, but we didn't have, like, the normal Saturday college football thing. No championship games, nothing. Kind of like this lull that was invaded by cadets celebrating and doing push-ups.
That is true. Yeah, it is. It's always sad when college football season kind of running down to the end, because we're already looking forward to like the next season. Like the portal's already open. It's just such a weird schedule. Like we're not even close to finish with this season. We'd have this whole 12-team playoff, and we're already looking forward to the next part. It's a real weird situation right now in college football.
Yeah, and the portal opening on December 9th is just strange by itself. It's been open now a week, and it's weird to have the portal open. You have entire teams that are opting out of bowl games. Calendar's all wonky, and it's wrong, and I know why they do it. You know, the academics out there are shouting at their radios now going, they're student-athletes. They need to be enrolled by January 6th at their new school. That's why the portal opens December 9th. I get that. But maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe the season should start in early August, move it forward so that, you know, all the games could be played and, you know, some of the postseason could be played before the portal opens, or move the portal window back. Have the portal open the same weekend of the semifinals or the same weekend as the national championship game, so it affects fewer teams that still have bowl games to play. Maybe it should be opening right around December 31st, and that leaves athletes, student-athletes, if we want to call them that, leaves them a week to get enrolled at their new school. And if you know you're jumping in the portal, maybe you could have all that stuff done ahead of time, but you can't officially get into the portal until, you know, the season itself is over. I don't know. I'd love to hear what our listeners think of what's going on out there at 503-417-7575. You're right, it's weird. Cam is in Eugene. Cam, what's on your mind?
Hey, John. I didn't really have a problem with the Heisman. I think it's one of those years where there was more than one right answer. I kind of, when you put it on the shelf, when it's all said and done, you compare it with the RG3 versus Luck year, or maybe the Derrick Henry versus Christian McCaffrey year. It's too close to call. An amazing season for both those guys and Cam Scataboo, who didn't get to go, and Dylan and Ward. A lot of good players this year. I wanted to ask you a question about the transfer portal while we're waiting for the playoff games to kick off. A couple of things going on, news stories in the background. It looks like Utah has a new quarterback to fit their new offensive scheme. Cam Rising, I haven't heard what he's going to do yet, but the shine's kind of off in the last two seasons. What do you think the likelihood and advisability is that he could go to a place like Oregon State for his last year of college football? Another similar question, this time looking at Ohio State. There are people that say Ryan Day is going to be gone if he doesn't win a national title this year. I don't think Ohio State's winning the national title this year. If he were to get fired and Oregon loses some coaches to the coaching carousel, specifically an offensive coordinator.
I know where you're going.
World,
I know where you're going.
I know. I'll let you tell the listeners in case they haven't picked up on it yet, but advisability and likelihood that could happen in the future.
Yeah, you're asking about the return of Chip Kelly to Camelot. No, I don't think Chip Kelly would return. No, I also don't think Ryan Day is going to get fired unless he does something ridiculous between now and, you know, whenever Ohio State is knocked out of the playoffs. I don't think Ohio State's going to win it. And I don't think Ryan Day is going to get fired because of the financials involved. I'll say this, like, we all have a lot of things going on in our lives, but have you ever come across a decision where, you know, you go, we just have too much going on, we need to put this on pause? That's the Ryan Day situation at Ohio State. They know that he's probably not the forever guy at Ohio State. He's got a problem with Michigan. He's been unable to win those games, and it's haunting him. But you have college athletics facing all of these lawsuits and more to come. You have the House settlement. You have revenue sharing. You have a lot of discussion about the expanded playoff, and Ohio State made the playoff. That, in the end, I think is going to become a badge of honor for schools. How many playoff appearances do you have in the last decade? Ohio State can now say one. We made the 12-team playoff. But if you're going to fire Ryan Day, you're firing Chip Kelly, and you're firing the whole staff. And that is about a $65 million proposition. And maybe people at Ohio State are so unhappy with what Ryan Day has done that they're willing to eat that. I don't know. If they're willing to eat it, Ohio State may say, okay, yeah, we'll do it. But you're talking about firing all those coaches. You know, Day like $44 million by himself. Then your revenue sharing, and if I'm Ohio State, I know I'm not happy long-term with Ryan Day, but I'm going to date him for a while because we don't know how revenue sharing's going. We don't know how many more lawsuits are coming. And you know, to the caller's point, let's just assume it does happen, that Ohio State fires Ryan Day. Chip Kelly, can you go back home? I know that when Dan Lanning was hired, Chip Kelly was interested. I also know it never got that serious to the point where, like, they were putting financial figures in front of Chip Kelly. But it was Chip Kelly. It was Justin Wilcox. It was Dan Lanning. I think all along, Oregon probably wanted Lanning 100%. They wanted the recruiter. I think they were trying to make their donors and former players happy by making Wilcox feel like he really was taken seriously and even had the job in one capacity. Although, you know, he kind of rolled his eyes at me when I asked him, you know, when they offered the job, was it offered to you in a way that you ever would have accepted it? And he kind of rolled your eyes and he said, I'll tell you a story someday. And so I think they offered him the job in a way that they knew he wouldn't accept it. Like, hey, you can't bring any assistant coaches. We have to name who your staff is. We're going to put Tosh Lapoy, who Wilcox doesn't care for as your defensive coordinator. You're going to put all these guys in the room together, and we're going to make you work with them. How about it? Will you take it? No? Okay, we're moving on to Dan Lanning. I think that's kind of how it went. I just don't think Chip Kelly comes back in that capacity. And I think if you told Chip Kelly we're going to fire you, knowing that they're going to pay him out on the contract that he has as the offensive coordinator at Ohio State, I think he'd be much more inclined at this point to sit on a beach in Los Angeles. I don't think he sold his home.
Would Duck fans actually want Chip Kelly back? Like, did you watch the Ohio State offense this year? It was it wasn't great. Like, for all the talent that they had, the way they performed against Michigan, I don't know that I'd want
him
back.
There was some weirdness. There were some weird play calls. And yeah. I can't tell if that's Chip or he and Ryan Day not seeing eye to eye, like play to play, because Day is a play caller, or is there something else going on at Ohio State that it's just weird? Like, there were some third down and, you know, third and eight, third and 11 situations where they're running the football.
It'd be like draw plays. Yeah, it didn't make any sense. Like, if I'm a Duck fan, and I understand if Will Stein left, like, I don't know that Chip Kelly would be the guy that I want. I feel like they've gone away where they're going young, they're going recruiting, they're going, you know, up pace. And
not a recruiter, yeah.
And I think it's completely different than what it was, and I think Oregon's in a better spot than they were with Chip Kelly. I get the, you know, the love that Chip Kelly has, and he deserves it all, but why go back? Like, I feel like you need to move forward with that.
And to that point, does Dan Lanning want Chip Kelly on his shoulder as, hey, the former head coach is in the room now? I think there's a number of ways that doesn't work.
And you heard what he said when he's talking about old coaches, Mike Bellotti. Like, yeah, I'm willing to listen to him, and I want to hear what he has to say. Do I actually listen and take it into account? No. Maybe, maybe not, but I don't always listen.
You give me Chip Kelly in, like, 8 years as a consultant on the offensive side?
I'll take that.
Yeah, you take that, but... But I also, look, in spending time and knowing Chip for a long time and texting him when he made the decision to leave UCLA and knowing where his head was, I kind of think he's at a point where he doesn't want to be a head coach, and there'll be a day when he doesn't want to be a coordinator. Let's go to Mike in Portland. We have a line open now at 417-7575. Mike, what's up?
Hey, John. First of all, man, I want to come on today and not fantasize. When I listen to your show, I hear a lot of people coming on the air fantasizing. Now, let's talk about Travis Hunter. If Travis Hunter had been under Dan Lanning, he wouldn't have got that Heisman Trophy, because Dan Lanning would have made him pick one position only and play, true, as well as any other coach. Now, this is the edge that Colorado has with
Coach Prime.
What's his name? Coach Prime.
Yeah.
Because he done played the game before, he realized what a football player can actually do and actually can excel upon. Also, Travis Hunter done destroyed the myth that HBC players can't play in a Power 5 league. All that nonsense. And I'm going to tell you something else, John, about Dan Lanning. Dan Lanning has some issues, man, with ethics. We know that he'll do anything to win a game. He'll cheat. He'll do anything. I don't think that's a good role model. I wouldn't want my son to go there. You're going to see that next week when the Ducks do play. That's it, man. That's a wrap.
Let me ask you this. One of the arguments I have against Travis Leonard being the Heisman winner is I don't think he was the best player on his team. I thought Shedeur Sanders was the more valuable player.
John, what Shedeur has done, what Ashton Gentry is doing, all of these guys, we'd have seen that before, man. That's not anything that you want to brag about. What Travis Hunter has done, hey, never been done before. So that's what you're going to reward him for, because he did something different, John. Mm. That's what it's all about, man.
Yeah, I remember.
You gotta get out.
Gordon Lockbaum played at Holy Cross. He played both ways a few years ago.
Not all them snaps. Not all. Not being a all American man on both ends of the game, John. That's what I'm talking about, man. Quit trying to downsize somebody else, man. You always want to put up the Ducks. Man, the Ducks ain't all that great, Don.
I'm trying to lift Shedeur Sanders here. I think if you take Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders, you take one of those players away from Colorado. I think if you take Shedeur away from Colorado, that's like a 5-win team. You take Travis Hunter away, they probably win the same number of games.
John, look, man, you've been wrong so many times. In the beginning of the season, you said that Travis Hunter wasn't going to even win. You said that Colorado wasn't going to only win 4 games. Mm-hmm. You've been wrong, John, every occasion.
I said Colorado would make a bowl game.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. You said they were going to the national championship.
Well, I was wrong. But, John, let me tell you one last thing. One last thing about...
I had Travis Hunter on my Heisman ballot. He just wasn't first.
Okay, I got that. John, let me tell you one last thing why Colorado is going to attract more talented black players than the Ducks will ever do. And I'm going to tell you one of the reasons. Have you ever noticed that Colorado, how they advertise the menu? Do you ever see what these guys eat? They got a chef. They just show you all the food. You know, all the food that these guys like to eat. I looked at the Ducks, what they had for Thanksgiving, John. They were eating on paper plates. The food didn't look good at all. You know, and they looked like they were eating, man, in a greasy spoon. You look at the Colorado players, John. They was like they were in a 5-star restaurant. I'm just trying to tell you, man, that the Ducks just ain't, man, but, they just don't know how to
attack. How do you say that, though, if Oregon is playing in the playoff and Colorado's not? Who has had the better season?
John, the Ducks, that team that the Ducks got, man, they've been building that thing for years, man. Chris Sabal down there had that thing together. Willie Taggart helped put that thing together. Hey, this guy did great for only being a coach for a couple of years, man. You can't beat that. And
next topic, is Coach Prime going to be at Colorado next season, or is he in the NFL?
He's going to be there, man. He done made a commitment to, Juju, that quarterback, and all these other guys coming in. He's a man of his word, man. He ain't going nowhere.
Okay. All right.
Talk to you later.
Mike in Portland. There he goes. I appreciate the call. More phone calls. 503-417-7575.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Pac-12 says it's looking at and discussing a championship football game for 2026 and beyond when the conference reconstitutes. Also, the College Football Playoff Executive Committee will be meeting in January. That's all the commissioners of the existing conferences. They meet, and they're going to talk about tweaks to the playoff. I think those two things have something in common. One has to do with the other. Because if I'm the Pac-12, I want to hear both from my media partner who would buy that championship game and from the playoff committee, how are the championship football games going to fit into the selection process for teams moving forward? Because if you're the Pac-12, you've got a little advantage here because the other entities, the Big Ten, the SEC, the ACC, they're all locked into these conference championship games. They can't unwind them without making their TV partners unhappy. But the Pac-12 can go, hey, wait a minute. How do you view those championship games? Is this a good thing? Do we need this? I think they end up playing one. I think it's inevitable. I think it's probably in Vegas or Los Angeles, Allegiant or SoFi. But keep an eye on that. The committee will make some tweaks to the format. We're talking about the Heisman Trophy weekend and the college football season. Great calls in segment one. Let's keep it going. 503-417-7575 is the number. Tim is in Canby. Tim, what's up?
Hey, John. Before I comment, I just want to say, first of all, I think I probably owe you an apology for being a total noob on Saturday night. I saw you at a local restaurant, and I hopped out of my car to say hi. But I didn't. You were a celebrity sighting for me, so I was a little nervous, and I probably made a total fool out of myself.
You made no such fool of yourself. There is no such thing, man. I appreciate meeting the listeners of the show and the readers. So anytime you want to give me a fist bump, you give me a fist bump.
All right. My wife completely thought I was being crazy. She had no idea what was going on, but
it's all right.
It was great to see you. Hey, I'm impressed with all the Heisman candidates. It was awesome to see Gabriel up there. To be honest, I didn't think he was going to win. I thought it was going to go the way it went, but it was great to see an Oregon Duck up there again and have the representation for that prestigious award. But I thought it went to the right person. That was a pretty amazing feat. And Hunter came across super humble and just a great kid. And it was great to see that happen.
We had him on this show. I think it was two media days ago, two summers ago in Vegas. And he was great. And had a great talk with him. I liked him. I was struck by the fact that, Travis Hunter was waiting in my interview area in Vegas. And Dan Lanning, the Oregon coach, his Oregon was there as well for that media day. It was that final media day two seasons ago. And Oregon and Dan Lanning and Travis Hunter were slapping backs and shaking hands and catching up because he had recruited him. And I no doubt Travis Hunter deserving of the award. It is one of those years, though, where I think there's a debate. Like, there's a lot of years where it's just not debatable. We all go, that's the winner. So in that way, I think the Heisman got some luster back on Saturday night, that there was a lot of intrigue into who was going to win it. I voted Jenty, but I kind of knew, like everybody else, Hunter was going to win it. And I didn't, like, I saw some ballots where some people didn't put Jenty on the ballot. And I was like, how do you not have him on your ballot unless you're just trying to cook the books for the guy that you think is going to win?
I was going to say, isn't this more of a narrative type of thing where, because even like Travis Hunter deserves to be on the ballot. Ashton Jenty deserves to be on 100%. The ballot. How are these guys not on the ballot? It doesn't make any sense. It's turning into a whole political race where it's like, well, if you like one guy, you can't like the other. Like you're out there, you're saying, look, I voted for Jenty, but I love Travis Hunter. Like he's a really good player and it's okay to like both people. I hated the fact that Ashton Jenty, like, because he didn't break Barry Sanders' record, like people weren't going to vote for him. Like that's insane to me. Like he was awesome. He was one of the top three college football players in this season. Yet people aren't going to vote for him. It doesn't make any sense.
I thought there was two real problems because you had a choice between Hunter and Jenty for one. Who's going to be number one? Who's going to be number two on your ballot? And then the second debate was who do you put third? And it really came down to Dylan Gabriel or Cam Scataboo or Cam Ward. So there's three people for that third place spot. It was the kind of year where I wish they would let us rank 1 to 5 because I would have gone Jenty, Hunter, Gabriel, Scataboo, Ward. That's how my five would have went. But unfortunately, after Gabriel rounded out my ballot, I was out of options. And so I was like, gosh, Cam Scataboo should have been there.
It was a weird year where there was no like clear cut winner, right? Like I was actually shocked how close it actually finished up the voting.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like if you vote Hunter, you're not wrong. You vote Jenty, you're not wrong. But you can do that all the way down to like 6 or 7. Like there was a lot of people that no one really like stood out and, you know, took that trophy. So it was a weird kind of year this year. And I wonder if that happens more often now that we are in this, you know, transfer portal NIL era.
Well, and yeah, there's a lot of mixed allegiances too, because Travis Hunter wins, right? He didn't win his region. He is in the Western region and the West went to Jenty in a narrow decision. It was, you know, that was a rare case. Like normally the winner wins his own region. Travis Hunter won the Heisman Trophy with voters in the East, voters in the South, and voters in the Midwest, because the voters in the Western part of the United States picked Ashton Jenty. I thought that was interesting, even with Hunter playing in the western part of the country. Mark in Portland, you're on, man. What's up?
Hey, I just got a question for you. I mean, if Boise State was playing Colorado, who do you think would affect the game more between those two guys?
100%.
And who would win that game because of how one of the or the other affected the game? I could tell you as an Oregon fan, I would be shocked if most Oregon fans, after watching Jenty against Oregon, if you would have more fear of Travis Hunter playing Colorado than you would of the running back for Boise State. So he made his team, in my opinion, better. It's great what Travis Hunter did. And Mike calling and completely bad-mouthing Oregon, and he has no validity. He makes no good points whatsoever when he talks about Colorado, because he's putting down a guy who's Dan Lanning, who's 13-0 in his first year in the Big Ten, beat Penn State, beat Ohio State, beat Michigan and Wisconsin. John, in the last 2 years, he's lost to one team by 3 points. A national championship, played in the national title game, Washington. Those are the only two games he's lost in 2 seasons. So bad-mouthing him just destroys his whole point. Deion Sanders had a great year, but let's be honest, the best coach, he wasn't the best coach in his own league. Arizona State, Dillingham, they won the conference. They're in the playoff. Oregon is playing in the Rose Bowl, a playoff spot, while Colorado's going to the Alamo Bowl. So it was a good season for Colorado, but we seem to overinflate everything Deion Sanders does. He's a good coach, no doubt, but was he the best coach in the Big 12 this year?
No. No.
They didn't play one ranked team all year, Colorado. They lost to Kansas when they had to win. How did they lose to Kansas, by the way? It was a running back that wasn't as good as Travis Genty that ran over them.
Ashton Genty would have gone for 250 or 300 against Colorado. It would have been disgusting. But, there's something to be said. I think Genty got downgraded because of the competition in the Mountain West Conference. I think Genty got downgraded because it's a group of five. I think, people didn't think about the 192 yards he put up against Oregon. And what I got tired of seeing, and I hope this doesn't continue, and you know it will, is Travis Hunter getting targeted and thrown passes while his team was up 3 scores in the fourth quarter. Ashton Genty, when you look at his season, did you know which team statistically did the best job? I mean, held him to the fewest amount of rushing yards this season? Steven, off the top of your head, do you know?
I would guess Portland State.
He played the first half against Portland State, and he went for, what was it, $115?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if I'm Bruce Barnum in Portland State, I am going, 11 carries, 127 yards. They held him to that was his season low.
Hang the banner.
Rushing yards. Portland State should be out today going, we held Ashton Genty to fewer rushing yards than Oregon, fewer rushing yards than anybody in America. Playoff teams want to know how to defend Ashton Genty. Call Bruce Barnum. But the truth is they took him out at halftime. They were, he could have had 300 or 400 yards against Portland State. He would have destroyed Barry Sanders' record had they not played him. And to the credit of the coaching staff, Dirk Cutter, the offensive coordinator at Boise State, Spencer Danielson, the head coach, they were playing the long game at Boise State. And I talked to Jeremiah Dickey, the AD at Boise State today, for a long time. He's out fundraising. They're getting ready for a playoff game. He was at the Downtown Athletic Club with Genty. And, Boise State is playing the long game here. Jimmy is in Eugene, listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Thanks for taking my call. I think for me, with what happened last year with Penix, ESPN kind of doesn't get a lot of the blame, but they obviously last year they kind of controlled the strings of who was going to win. I think we all know Penix was the better player than Daniels, and I think this year kind of played out the same way. I mean, I don't think the best person won the award. It was pretty obvious. It was kind of a political thing, and ESPN made their choice and just kind of let Deion and all of his alliance kind of pave the way. I mean, when you see Lil Wayne and Cam Newton in the front row, and they all said they wouldn't even be there unless Travis Hunter was going to win, you knew they all knew who was winning that on Saturday night. So I think for me, our society, it seems like everybody tries to control things. And, in reality, being objective and who was really the outright winner, seems like it's more a political game. It's too bad. I think Travis Hunter is way overrated. I think, what is he, 170 pounds? He doesn't play special teams. I think he'll be average at best in the NFL. I think he's going to get probably injured early, and I think he's going to be a huge bust.
Well, I think we can talk about these guys without kind of downgrading one versus the other. And as Steven said, just because you like Hunter or you like Jenty doesn't mean you have to dislike the other guy. And there, you know, it's the kind of year where there were more than one right answer. And my, you know, to the point of hype, though, you're right. I mean, ESPN and Fox are as guilty as anybody else. And I don't know that I can blame them. If I'm ESPN and I know that, hey, I'm getting Ashton Jenty at the ceremony, that brings in Boise, Idaho, 517,000 TV households, or I'm bringing in Coach Prime and I can put him on and get him in the work him into the programming that night, you're getting America.
I was going to say this. Yeah. To that point, Yahoo Sports, they put out a tweet, John, that said Heisman voters everywhere gave props to Travis Hunter, and it was the fourth highest vote percentage ever Travis Hunter got. Awesome, right? Well, our friend BJ Raines, he said, well, that's an interesting way to put it. He was also second highest this year to Jenty, who was on 95% of the votes.
Right.
So,
right.
Like, they're putting this tweet out saying, oh, look at all those props for Travis Hunter, when Jenty actually had more actual people vote for him to win the Heisman. It's true. It's just one of those things where they're pushing what they want to push. And again, I don't blame him for voting for Travis Hunter. He's a well-deserved candidate. But let's just be honest about this all.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of framing of the narrative that goes on in all things. Let's go to Bend, Oregon. We'll go to Central Oregon. Kirk is listening on the ticket. Kirk, what's up, man?
Hey, John. I was out here moving some hay with my tractor and enjoying the show. You know, the whole Heisman Trophy thing anymore is so hit and miss whether or not the guy you wanted wins or loses, and then relating that to their professional career. There's been a lot of Heisman Trophy candidates that don't do so well, and those that and the others that have. But I think the thing that gripes me the most is the whole what a great coach Prime is. And come on, you're a grown man. How about using your real name, not your nickname? And if it wasn't for NIL and the transfer portal, who knows what he has? He's obviously a great recruiter. They have a lot of money coming to that program. But if you remember when he first took that job, how many kids they basically booted out and had to go elsewhere because they weren't good enough. And it's like, if you're such a great coach, coach them up. You know, Mike Riley was notorious for bringing in two-star kids, three-star kids. And there was a couple of years there that Oregon State was the number one college to get draft picks with 9 or 10 kids going to the NFL for a few years, you know, and they were not five-star recruits out of high school. And to me, that's a true coach. Is somebody who brings in, takes the talent he has or the talents they were able to get legitimately, because I think college athletics is not legitimate anymore. It's minor league professional sports, particularly football. You know, I talked to a guy here in town who's a Coug, and I said, hey, the Pac-2, huh? And he goes, you know, I'm done with college athletics. And look at those guys, once again, losing their top quarterback to the transfer portal. And it's like, how do you invest as a fan in a team, in a college that maybe you went to and have been fans for all this time, and not just be so disillusioned and disappointed in what's happened now to where these kids have no buy-in, no loyalty. It's who, you know, how much are you going to pay me? It's like Coach Saban quit. It's like, well, he's done with this stuff. I mean, nobody wants to fail. I just saw a little YouTube video with Brady talking about you don't get to be really good until you failed and then become better because of that. If you think you're going to fail, I'm just going to check out and go to another school and do it over and over and over again.
Well, even the good kids are getting, you know, into the portal. And what we hear people saying all the time is like, you know, I don't want to take away an opportunity from these kids that didn't have opportunity. But the truth is, you can be happy for a player like John Mateer. It's going to go get $2 or $3 million, you know, by getting into the portal. It's life-changing money. If it were your child, you'd probably feel the same way. And you'd say, hey, gosh, you know, this isn't the college thing that I used to support, but you got to do what's right for you. But, you know, you can be happy for John Mateer, but sad for college athletics because John Mateer is the exception. He's getting in the portal. The money's there. It's worth it for him to make the move. But unfortunately, there are like 3,000 other athletes that are going to get into the portal. that are not going to be that exception. They are going to lose traction for their education. They are going to not get the money that they feel like. They're going to end up transferring multiple times. And, I do think Congress is going to get involved. I know Mike Baumgartner, who is elected in the state of Washington, he's reached out to me. We have talked. And he is all about looking at, they're starting to talk. So they are. There's a antitrust aspect. There is a committee being put together, a Senate committee on NIL. There is a labor union issue. There's a higher education issue. They're going to get the rails back on it. And I would say this to people, like the caller said, his friend says, I'm done with college athletics. You can be done. You can be done for a while. I think they'll get the rails back on it. I think they will try to level the playing field, because everything that they did for generations trying to level the playing field is now out the window. And I think they'll start over, but it's going to start with players having a union, collectively bargaining. It's going to start with the conferences all coming together and saying, hey, we have to negotiate together against the players' union and negotiate some rules for the portal, renegotiate some rules for revenue sharing. And I think eventually it ends up looking a lot like the NFL Lite. I do. Our Big Splash and more of your phone calls coming up.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Oh, I've got a good Big Splash coming up. Or I should just say the Big Splash coming up in a couple of minutes is a good one. How about that? Let's take a couple calls, then we'll go to the Big Splash. I bet I surprise you with it. Norm is in Vancouver. Norm, what's up?
Hey, John, just a little bit about the Travis Hunter and the Heisman thing, dude. Heisman is supposed to be the best player in the country, period, right? Best all-around player.
Yeah.
We got to give him the award because I'm not sure where else or what other position Jenty would play on the field. I guess we could do a DB with him or something. Quarterback from Oregon. Where else is he going to play on the field? But at the same time, any other sport, if you're the best player on the field, you're the best player on the field, and you can play any position, period. So why is it special, and why did Travis get to play both sides of the field? Because his coach allowed them. Every single major power in the country, we'll have two or three players that could play both sides of the ball all game long. So how is it that just Travis was able to do that? Why did Deion allow him to do that? Whereas there's 10 other guys I'm certain that could fill that same role that he does.
Maybe. I don't know. I'd have to know more. I think if Travis Hunter could have been a better receiver if he played receiver all the time, or a better DB if he just focused on being a defensive back at practice and didn't have to jump into the offensive side. Like, there's lots of reasons why coaches won't let guys go both ways. But I also think if you put Travis Hunter on Oregon's team, Dan Lanning might have let him, hey, you're a defensive back, we'll play you situationally on offense. He might have let him play. I don't know. I think what Travis Hunter did was very unique. He's the most unique player. He's the most unique, talented player in the country. But if you're asking me who the MVP of college football is, Boise State has got a first-round bye in the college football playoff. Boise State played Oregon to the wire. Ashton Jeanty did that. Without him, they're not there. And to me, that's what put him over the top. But I get the other arguments, and I'm not ignoring Travis Hunter. He's on my ballot, too. John is in Portland. John, go ahead. Welcome.
Yes, I just want to talk about you were talking about NIL. I'm a Marshall University alumni, and this year we had to drop out of our bowl due to lack of players. It was over 30 players. We'd lost three quarterbacks, and the coach left. It's been tough on the community because the school itself is going to be out almost $2.5 million.
Yep.
For me, it's a real struggle to accept that is our future moving forward, that we never know when we'll win a championship but can't go to a bowl.
Yeah, you shouldn't accept it. And the solution is easy. the portal window shouldn't be where it is. There, you know, their players should be on a team until the end of the season. The fact of the matter is, there's a number of teams in the playoff who have had backup players get into the portal. It's going to affect the playoff even with depth. We're not talking about major starters or whatever, but it'll affect the depth of some of the teams in the playoff. It brings us to our big splash. Get this.
This is
the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there. Must be
the big splash. Brought to you by Keller Burger, home of the peanut butter pickle bacon burger, and voted best burger 5 years in a row. Keller Burger, the burgers your mama warned you about.
TJ Uiagalelei, former Oregon State, Clemson, and Florida State quarterback, has declared for the 2025 NFL Draft. He thanked everyone who's been part of the incredible journey, thanked his coaches, thanked his family, leaned on his faith in his social media posts. But at the bottom of the post, it struck me as the most 2024 thing ever, as DJ put photos from all three of his teams. He's going to the NFL, or we'll see.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. With small ships that bring travelers closer to the destination, there's more time to explore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Learn more at Viking.com.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Coming up, we're going to have a University of Portland women's basketball player, Maisie Burnham, will be on the show at 4:24. UP's on fire. Back-to-back NCAA tournament appearances for Michael Meek's program. Now looking for a third. And it's really interesting. UP's having trouble drawing for games. Fans have not filled their arena to see this team play. Media not showing up to see this team play. Why should this be a secret? They're good. UP women's basketball probably going to the NCAA tournament again. We'll have Maisie on the show to talk about it. 5 at 5 coming up at top of the hour, an hour from now. We're going to play some Punch It Audio. Before we get into Punch It Audio, can we talk about the elephant in the room at the Heisman ceremony? Can we have a mature conversation about Travis Hunter's girlfriend that doesn't go off the rails, that doesn't cause people to blow a gasket? She is obviously out there with him. And I like, see, and this is my thing. Like, if I like you and you and I are friends, by extension of that, when your significant other or the person you have picked to spend time with walks in the room with you, I immediately go, well, by the transitive property of geometry, I am going to also like and respect this person, this other person that's with him. And so I am inclined when I see Travis Hunter, a kid that, you know, we had him on the show. I really liked him. He made a positive impression on me in my one time interviewing him one-on-one. I've watched him conduct himself over the course of the year, watched him conduct himself at the ceremony, and thought to myself, This is a good guy. His girlfriend, I want to believe, is good people as well. But I do have concerns about, what happens next. Can we have a real conversation, or will people lose their minds if we do it? Because now, Hunt, you know, everybody's saying he should break up with her on social media because she does and has had a couple of moments. She had the moment earlier this season where he was pointing at the crowd at Illinois, and she said she thought he was pointing at the cheerleaders. She got mad at him after the game, and then people went, oh, that's a red flag. It's a bad sign. And now he's apparently at some event, and she was saying, you're taking too long. And then at the Heisman thing, you know, Coach Prime had to reach over and tell her, hey, it's stand up. Your guy just won the Heisman. And Travis Hunter, I like him. I want to like that significant other that's, who's with him. But Steven, you and I were talking about this in the commercial break, you know, like I just don't know. I don't know if that relationship is going to make it, given the scrutiny, the public scrutiny that it's under. I think it's a celebrity relationship, like it or not.
That's the problem, is how can she handle the spotlight? Because whether she wants it or not, like, she's going to be a celebrity now because Travis Hunter is so good at football and he's going to be a top five pick, maybe the number one overall pick. Like, she's going to be seen by more and more people. And we, you know, we already see the criticism of Brittany Mahomes, how she gets criticized fairly or unfairly. I think with Travis Hunter now, he's come out and he's defended her. Like, he went on one of his streams and was defending her, saying she's been drinking and crying all day. Like, she feels so bad with how everything got handled and miscommunication. It did scream a little bit of the old picture of Russell Wilson with his old girlfriend when he got drafted. She's got the crazy face on, like, you know, I finally got in. I don't know. I want to believe that it is true love. You know, they've been together for a while, but there's been some things, like, you know, I don't know. But I feel like you should see, when you see everyone else standing for standing ovation, like, why are you not standing for him? Like, I don't know. There were some things, but I believe in him, John. I believe.
Do you think she's happy for him? Do you think she's happy for his success?
Yeah, I do. I think it was more just maybe she's a little nervous in front of everybody and she doesn't know exactly what to do. Like, she just sat there and she's just sitting there waiting at this gig that Travis Hunter has, taking pictures of everybody. Like, how long are we doing this? Like, and she's just very blunt and very honest with things. So I think she is happy for him. Some people just can't really express that.
And I and she's got a name, you know, and I didn't know it off the top of my head. It's Leanna Lene. So she's in the middle of this and, you know, she's getting criticized for not standing up and she's getting criticized for, you know, she's got an engagement ring on and she held up the engagement ring at the Heisman thing when they posed for photographs. She's letting everybody know they're engaged. Other people on social media are saying the guy needs a prenup. I will say this, like, you know, we see these celebrity couples who get together. And I think about this as it pertains to, like, when you think about the Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce relationship that comes to mind. It's easy one because sports fans and entertainment fans will get it, that, you know, it would require a wide berth to date Taylor Swift. It would require a wide berth to date Travis Kelce. That significant other is going to have to understand kind of the way of their professional world and the demands that come with it. And the fact that, like, it's not going to be a normal relationship. And so in some weird way, it works when Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston get together, or Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie get together, or Ben Affleck and J-Lo get together. It works because they go, okay, you're going to get it. You're going to understand there is no privacy and you're going to be able to roll with it. And it takes a certain either grace that you have to have, or an understanding of just, hey, or maybe you're just as big a star. And so you bring in just as much a distraction. Cause I would say this, it would not be easy to be the significant, to be the and one with a celebrity. And because Travis Hunter is now a Heisman Trophy winner, he's going to go off and have a great NFL career and he's going to make money, that, you know, that and one is going to be a really tricky spot to be in. But I also think she's done some things, like, you know, you just got to know. You got to know that you can't go after him after a game. You know, even if you do think he did something that wasn't respectful to your relationship, talk to him about it when you're in private. You can't be, like, on the field. And I felt really bad for him. He looked like some guy at the shopping mall who got accused of looking at some girl, and he was really just looking at an Auntie Annie's pretzel stand, you know? Like, it was just, it felt really bad for him. And the fact that they have to come out is kind of ridiculous and defend their relationship or whatever. Like, I'm going to leave them alone from that standpoint. But I'll just say this, it will be a rocky road. It will have trials and tribulations. All relationships do. And then you throw on top of it the scrutiny and the social media scrutiny. But I also, Steven, I'm here to tell you, like, you know, I'm minding my business. I'm on the gram. You can find me there. I'm on TikTok. You can find me there. But I am scrolling along and I will occasionally run into Travis Hunter and his girlfriend dancing on social media. And I'm like, why is this showing up in my algorithm? It must be because I'm a sports guy. And I'm thinking, well, they're out there as a couple. They're wearing Halloween costumes and dancing in their free time. It's weird. Strange.
It is weird, but I feel like that's 2024 and almost into 25 now. That's kind of what we care about. Yeah.
Do you think, like, can you imagine how hard it would be to, like, let's put yourself in her shoes first, okay? That would be a really difficult position to be in, because as a 20-year-old or a 21-year-old or 22-year-old person, you're not fully developed as a human, and now you are facing the scrutiny of national attention and how you react and what your body language is when your significant other is getting a national award. Like, that's a very adult situation to be in. I cannot imagine it's an easy position for her.
It's a little nitpicky, I will say. Like, I don't have the best body language. Like, yeah. I couldn't imagine. Like, if Coach Vaughn was out there being a celebrity and I'm just sitting next to her and I just look like I'm bored. Just because I sit there. That's just how I sit. I mean, I don't, you know.
I remember Oprah, you know, she had Stedman. You remember Oprah Winfrey's significant other? Stedman handled it, man. He handled his business. He knew he was Stedman. He just was, you know, nobody was looking for him to solve the world's problems. They were all looking at Oprah. And he was like, I'm just happy to be here. And, you know, he was the and one. So I think in any relationship, like, I had a course in college, in community college. It's probably the most valuable course I ever took. It was called Marriage and the Family. It was taught by a guy named George Hinn, who was a brilliant psychologist, sociologist. He was ahead of his time. And he said, like, he's talking to us, and we're like 18, 19 in his class. Like, it was a class you took as a freshman or a sophomore in college. And he said, like, when you draw up your future relationships, you want to draw them up as letters. And he said, you want the letter H, where person on the left, capital H, person on the left can stand on their own. Stand up. They're not going to fall over if you remove the rest of the extension of the letter H. And the person on the right can stand up on their own. And then there's this cross piece perpendicular going between them. He's like, this is what you're aiming for. Unfortunately, in the case of a lot of people, you end up with an A, a capital A, where you know if you remove one of the legs, what happens to the other leg? It's going to fall over. And I do see a little bit of A out there in some celebrity relationships, because you see people who are leaning on each other. Either they're both celebrities, or you see a really unhealthy letter A that is kind of lop skewed to the side, where you see like one person is just leaning all the way on the other. You don't want that. That's no fun for anyone. I wish them the best. Don't at me. I don't want to hear it, but I'm talking about it because everybody else is talking about it.
Who lasts longer, Travis and his fiance, or Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce?
I actually think Swift and Kelce are going to make it. But I believed in that from the beginning.
You did.
And I think part of that is that there's an understanding. Like, he's dating, arguably, jokes aside, he is dating arguably the biggest star on the planet. And it's going to take somebody like that. You're going to have some moxie yourself to be able to handle that. You know, she's going to eat up all the oxygen in the room. And I think Travis Kelce's going to be like, you know what? I've been in a lot of rooms where it's been about me. So he gets it. So, you know, unfortunately for him, the rooms for her are arenas, and for rooms for him are stadiums, you know, but I think they'll make it. I think the Hunter relationship is more vulnerable. They're younger. And I don't think that they probably, like, think about when you were 20. You don't know anything. Let's play some Punch It.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, here's Jake Deckert, Washington State coach, confirming that John Mateer's in the portal. His quarterback, second year in a row, his starting quarterback has jumped into the portal.
You know, met with John last night. Came back from his sister's graduation, had a lot of good family time. We talked about that last week on Friday. He has to make a big decision for his life. And college football is in a different place than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, however we remember it. You know, John will be the most sought-after player in the portal. I think he's going to be the best player in the country next year. He informed us that he is, in fact, going to hit the portal. Biggest thing for our program is it proves, once again, our process is working. Our process is working. Right? We're offering a bunch of kids that have no other Power 5 offers. We're developing into something really, really special. And I've said a lot about things the last couple weeks. You know, I talked in signing day about the recruiting calendar being messed up and we got to change it. You know, I talked last Friday, you know, there's $800 million of new Power 4, you know, rev share money that's infiltrated into the system right now. And, you know, backups at that level are getting $50,000 to $100,000. So college football is in a little bit of a weird place.
Jake Dickert spinning a negative into a positive, but he's right. They'll bounce back. They'll find another guy. It is a testament to their process in Washington State's place in the ecosystem. But you don't want to be regularly assuming that role in the food chain. John Mateer, will he end up at Oklahoma? That's kind of the odds-on bet, as Ben Arbuckle, his former coordinator at Washington State, is at Oklahoma. He's a Texas kid, rumored to be $3 million out there for John Mateer. James Franklin, Penn State coach, says that the calendar is broken. He must be listening to this show.
Bo Prabula did not want to leave our program, and he did not want to leave our program until the end of the season. But the way the portal is and the timing of it and the way our team is playing, and when you play the position of quarterback and there's only one spot and those spots are filling up, he felt like he was put in a no-win situation, and I agree with him.
There's a mature outlook from a coach, James Franklin, who is losing a player in the portal. Now, it's not going to affect the starters at places like Penn State. It's not going to affect Tennessee. Tennessee had 7 players, none of them starters, who got in the portal last week. 7. But it's going to affect depth. And if you have this happening on playoff rosters, this is not good for the sport. They should address it. They will change it.
But Bo Prabula, he did have a big run against Oregon in that Big Ten title game. He had an 18-yard run, got it down to, what, the 1 or 2-yard line. Like, this might actually hurt them on the field going forward in this playoff game.
The depth will be an issue for somebody. And I keep thinking about Tennessee. Tennessee got hit harder than anybody among the playoff teams. 7 last week. You know, that's Oregon State, I think, has 9. Like, just to give you some context, you know, people will say, oh, Oregon State didn't lose any starters. Well, you're like, you know, 2 quarters of a game away from having that be an impact for you. It will be an impact. Arizona State's Kenny Dillingham says he's not satisfied just being in the playoff. He's not satisfied with a quarterfinal game and a first-round bye. He's not satisfied.
If you're satisfied, like, now, like, golly, something's wrong. Like, you have an opportunity to be one of 8 teams left in college football playing for something. Like, you're hearing right now. Like, that's awesome. Like, that's exciting. But if you're satisfied when you have a chance to be one of 8 teams left in a sport that started with over 130, and you're like, oh, well, we made it. Golly. That'd be disappointing to me, because I think we're different than that. And I think the fact that they showed up shows that they're different than that. That, you know, we're going to, game by game, day by day, we're going to be the very best versions of us and see how far we go. See where it takes us.
ASU will be waiting for the winner of that Texas-Clemson game. Arizona State defensive tackle Zach Swanson. It's a transfer from Texas. Remember, Texas told him he wasn't good enough to play. He's now at Arizona State, with a chance maybe to play against Texas. Here's Swanson.
It'd be awesome. I mean, that's my dream. Like, that's a team who kicked me out and said I was never going to be good enough to play there. So that's something that has been on my agenda for a while. It's like a dream scenario, so I'm very excited about that.
Literally what was said? Exactly
what was said is, if you want to stay at Texas, you might as well quit football and just go to school here. So a lot of motivation there for me.
There he goes. Arizona State's Zach Swanson seeking redemption. There's nothing more dangerous than a defensive tackle scorned. Dan Lanning, he's got to watch Ohio State and Tennessee and figure out how to watch it, because how do you scout them both? Do you scout one? How do you watch that game?
I want to watch that game on my own, in front of my iPad, making my notes without anybody else bothering me, right? So we'll have a practice that morning. We'll get some work in that morning. And then, you know, we'll give the guys the opportunity to go watch the game. I can promise you every one of our players is going to be watching it. They'll be engaged on it, but I don't want to watch it in a room with anybody else. I want to be able to lock in and take notes.
Look, Dan Lanning will watch it with his iPad with nobody else giving him instruction. 24 days. Oregon will go 24 days between games. So my big question is not really about Ohio State and Tennessee, but come Rose Bowl kickoff on January 1 in Pasadena, does Oregon look sharp? And how do you do that if you're Dan Lanning? Do you have scrimmages? Do you create competitions for the next 24 days? You really have to focus on making that happen. Seahawks, all excited. Their fans were all pumped up for Sunday Night Football. This was legitimacy. A game against the Packers. This was like a playoff game. 30-13, Packers.
Third and five. Love putting it up top, back of the end zone. Oh, did Dobbs catch that? What a catch, Romeo Dobbs! Touchdown, Green Bay! What a catch!
I was not shocked by the outcome of that game. I feel like the NFC West has got a lot of teams that would be cannon fodder for the contenders right now. My 49ers among them, obviously. But the Seahawks outclassed in that one. They fall to 8-6. They're tied now with the Rams at 8-6 on top of the NFC West. Cardinals a game back. You got a real race. Rams or Seahawks, Steven? Who wins that division?
I think after Sunday night, I'm going to have to go with the Rams. The Seahawks, man, Geno got hurt. They looked terrible against the Packers. The Packers just outclassed them. I can believe in Matthew Stafford and Sean McVay just over Mike McDonald and an injured Geno right now. So give me the Rams. I'll take them to win the division.
Well, we finally found something Damian Lillard likes. The NBA Cup format. Lillard, Bucks Thunder, Tuesday, NBA Cup Championship.
I like it. I think it's... It provides excitement for us as players and excitement for the fans, and it's something on the line, you know, before you get to the playoffs. And I think it just brings out the best in us. You know, you get in these cup games where, you know, the floor is different, you know, the uniform is different, and you know that we're playing for something. It's a prize at the end, obviously, a trip to Vegas, and ultimately just an opportunity to win something as a team. And what that can do for the morale of a team.
How much are they getting for this, Steven? What is it, $100,000 for?
I want to say, yeah, it might be a little bit more when they get to Vegas. But, yeah, it was $100,000, I believe, to get to Las Vegas. If you get to the Final Four of that cup, every player gets $100,000. So, yeah, there is some motivation to play for.
So Lillard's missed three games this season. He's got a calf issue that's lingering, but he is saying he's going to play. Says it's just some discomfort. But... you know, in NBA Cup games, he scored 28 and 25 in these two games, and he's looked good. He and Giannis have complemented each other well. I hadn't thought about the NBA Cup as kind of being this practice round for the NBA playoffs, but it really has turned into that. And you're getting a chance to see some of these teams that maybe didn't get to where they wanted to in the playoffs play a little better in this cup with some money, some walking around money at stake. So Lillard and Giannis look like, you know, a marriage made in Vegas. There you go. All right, leave it here. We're going to talk some more basketball. Stick around.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
So last season, Michael Meek, the coach, University of Portland, made the NCAA tournament, second straight year. And I looked at the roster because I thought, okay, what kind of turnover will they have? He has 11 players back from last year's team. Think about that. As a mid-major school in the transfer portal era, you have 11 players come back. The University of Portland women's basketball team is 11-0. One of three teams that are 11-0 in the country. They are the only team to win every game by double digits this season. Best start in program history. Defensively, they are relentless. They're leading the nation in steals and turnovers forced. They've done a nice job. At the center of that is Maisie Burnham. She's joining us now. She's from the state of Washington, Liberty High School. And two-time WCC Player of the Week already this season. And really an instrumental part of an undefeated team. 11 players back, 11-0. That's not coincidental, Maisie, is it?
No, it's not. I think I'm, you know, very grateful to be a program like this. I mean, I think that just shows how special of a place it is here at Portland. I think we have a great coaching staff. Mike and his coaching staff recruit great girls. And year in, year out, you don't see a lot of movement from us. And I think that's what makes this program really special, is we all love being here. We're all bought in, and we all really love each other. So,
yeah, I'm going to talk basketball in a moment, but you guys got a chance this summer as a team to go to Croatia and Greece. I've been to Greece. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. But give us the TripAdvisor review on Croatia and Greece.
Oh my gosh, like you said, amazing. I mean, just what a once in a lifetime opportunity. Croatia made the biggest impact on me. I didn't really know what to expect, to be honest. I hadn't done much research or looked into it very much, but holy beautiful scenery. We went to Dubrovnik and Split was very, so much history. That was beautiful, so fun. And then Dubrovnik was my favorite. So beautiful. The city looks over the water. It's like castle vibes. Oh, it's like very magical. And then, of course, Greece is beautiful as well. Lots of history there. You know, the beaches were beautiful. So, yeah, definitely no complaints and very thankful for that opportunity.
Yeah, you go to an antique store in like Oregon or Washington and you think something's old. Then you go to Athens and you look up
exactly.
And you're like, okay. Like, yeah, I didn't know. Look. It's been a great start for you guys, and 11-0, you're winning kind of easy. How do you stay locked in when those wins are starting to line up the way they are?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think we are all pretty dialed in as a team and on the same page that even after some of our good wins, we're taking things away from it that we still need to improve on and get better at. And we see this journey as like, we haven't peaked. We want to peak in March. So it's just, how do we get better every game to like play the best basketball that we are in March? And I think when we have that mindset, that it's really easy. We're taking it a game at a time and no one's getting too full of themselves, which I think is really good. The coaching staff does a really good job of keeping us humble, keeping our head in the right place. And, you know, we're just going out there playing for each other. And I think that's what keeps our heads in the right place.
You guys, you know, obviously, the goal is to get to the NCAA tournament, win as many games as you can and get there. But yet last year, you got a little taste of that. What did you, mm-hmm. What were your thoughts last year on getting to the tournament and what you learned there? And does that focus at all or frame this season as it starts to approach?
Yeah, I mean, every opportunity that you have to go to the tournament is just an incredible blessing. And we've been lucky enough for the past 2 years to have a taste of that. And I think going into every season since then, our goal is not to just make it to the NCAA tournament. Our goal is now to like make a run, you know, win a game, win two maybe, you know. So I think that keeps us motivated, that it's not just the goal to get to the NCAA tournament anymore. Like now we want to, you know, do something different, make a new mark. So, but again, it is really, really hard to get there. So any time that any team can get there is such an incredible opportunity.
I want to go back to 1879. There was a small town in Spokane County, Washington, called Spangle. It was started by William Spangle, whose kids planted a tree. The tree was nicknamed Branchy. And I'm told that that tree stands tall in the center of town in Spangle. But you are from Spangle, Washington. Is Branchy still there?
That is a great question, and don't hate me, but I've never even heard that story before. I did not even know the history of that.
There you go.
I'm sure it is, but there's lots of trees in Sangle, but yeah, I'll have to check back on that one.
give us kind of the population density. Like, how do you explain to people when you say I'm from Spangle, like farmland around it? Like, how do you describe it to your teammates?
Yeah, I kind of say it's in the middle of nowhere. It's in the middle of wheat fields. You can drive through the town in about 10 seconds. yeah, not very populated. I graduated with a class of 26. So, wow. But great town, know everyone. It's awesome.
We used to, because I came from a smaller town, but it was like 35,000 people in California. And I would tell people, well, we had a McDonald's and we had a movie theater, you know, and that was how I sort of explained it. So I'm always interested in those smaller towns, how it's described. All right. So you play basketball and volleyball in high school. Like, did every girl in your class play on the teams?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how you had to do it at a small school. Everyone was participating, which is great. I mean, that's what you kind of want. But yeah, everyone played. All my friends played. It was just kind of what you grew up doing.
You guys are going to open conference play Thursday. You'll be at Loyola Marymount. You get your WCC home opener Saturday against Pacific. That'll be right here in Portland. People want to go see it. Tickets start at $7. So get out there and see them play. What would it mean to you to have families bring kids out, daughters out? I have three daughters, to see young kids and particularly young girls in the crowd.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Would that be amazing? I mean, we're trying to create something here special at UP. The more the merrier. We already have some girls. It's always our favorite time when AU teams, you know, bring their girls and they sit on the sidelines. Last game, I think we did an autograph signing after. It's just really fun. I mean, the more people that we have coming out to our games, the better experience it is for everyone. And I think I can speak for everyone on our team that we would just be really grateful and really appreciative. But we also play some fun basketball together, and I think we could be some good role models. We have great girls. Really, just everyone buys into each other. The successes are the team successes. We play really high intense basketball that can be fun to watch. So I think it would just be a great environment for whoever would want to join.
You guys play full court. You're pressing for 40 minutes, fast paced. It's really up and down. It's not walk the ball up the court basketball, but I often wonder about teams like that in the conditioning. What are you guys doing in practice? What does Mike Meek have you guys doing in practice to get you in that kind of shape?
Well, I think that's what's very unique. You know, I've been in another program besides this one, and I know hearing from others as well, a lot of programs just run you in practice, but we don't really need to do that because we just play our basketball scrimmage the way we do, and we kind of work ourselves into shape by playing. So you got to know that, you know, we're not doing some things right if we're on the line running in practice. But we get more of our conditioning in through how we play and, you know, repping our press in practice and, you know, kind of from those more live scenarios.
I watched you guys, I think it was Gonzaga last year, it was a big game with you guys, and it did have that intensity where you were playing to get into the tournament, and there was so much, I think, and a lot of people in Portland getting behind you late. I think people should get behind you guys now. Obviously, this is a team with a lot of potential. All right, so you like your coach, you like your practices. This is not a knock on him. What's the hardest part or the part of practice where you go, oh gosh, you know, what part of a Mike Meek practice do you kind of go, I need to just get through this?
Oh, you know, I don't know if there's a really big part, but I think Mike loves his long practices. So I think it's the being mentally engaged for 3 hours. Now we have to do it, but, you know, just being, we're not always going hard and live. Like, we have those moments where we do that, but he does have this standard that we have to be engaged to everything that's going on and, you know, really just investing in practice, I guess. And so I think just keeping that high level of engagement for 3 hours is where some of us decline a bit. The attention span gets a little hard, but I would say that's the hardest part.
I think all basketball coaches do that. They like to take you hostage in the gym, and they don't let you out throughout the winter. Maisie Burnham is our guest, University of Portland. They are 11-0. That is the best start in program history. They've made back-to-back NCAA tournament runs and are poised for another one. Again, as I mentioned, their home opener is Saturday against Pacific at 3:30. It's a doubleheader with the men. The men tip at 1 p.m., the women at 3:30 at UP. All right, help me with this, because you, from Liberty High School, you go to Eastern Washington and then to the University of Portland. You were the Big Sky Freshman of the Year at Eastern. But you're at Liberty and you're in this tiny school. Obviously, we know now you can play. You know that, right? You have that confidence. But how did you know it at Liberty? Or were there doubts when you go to the big city and play against other competition?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think growing up, I was always put in, my parents did a really good job of putting me in little, like, AAU. I played AAU since I was, really, really young. And then when I was in junior high, I then transitioned to a travel team. So I think it really helped to branch out. I think that's what a lot of smaller schools tend to do. I know, especially like Spokane areas, is get their young kids in AAU programs just because that helps develop and really expand their game. So I think that's what kind of helped me and got me exposure, because it is tough. I mean, coming from a small school and, competition-wise, being so small is not always as, competitive as bigger schools. And so I think just branching out and playing travel basketball, playing basketball against some of the top talent in the country was really beneficial and really helped me.
Here's another thing, because you're 6 feet tall and you play guard. And I have to think in your town at 6 foot, you weren't 6 foot in like sixth grade, but you were probably on the big, tall side.
Mm-hmm.
They put you as the middle. They put you as the center. How do you develop the skills to be a guard?
Yeah, I think growing up, I always had coaches and people around me pushing me to develop every aspect of my game. It was kind of, I was never really focused on just being one position, if that makes sense. I was always, doing ball handling with the point guards, doing finishing with the posts, and doing shooting. So I don't feel like when I was growing up, even given my height, I was really put in one position. And I think all through high school, all through junior high, I kind of was one of those players that could be put in multiple positions. And I think that was honestly a blessing. And, you gained so much more experience, and just it makes you a better player being that way. But I'm just thankful that I had coaches when I was young, not making me settle for just one position and just kind of exploring all positions. I also grew up playing against my brothers a lot, so I was obviously at a size disadvantage, so I had to do other things, I guess, to score on them.
You're hitting on something that I think about a lot, all right? Because three daughters in my family, the youngest is a killer in competition.
Yep.
And I credit the older two sisters, and I say, you guys created that monster. She wants to murder you in board games. She wants to kill you on the basketball court. Do you find that to be true? Do you look at teammates and go, I can tell you had an older sibling?
I totally agree with that. And I mean, it's the biggest blessing to be the youngest child, in my opinion, because it just makes you so much better and so much more competitive. And if you ask my brothers, they would say I was that annoying little competitive sister. So for sure.
Every time you get a rebound, you say, thank you, Chase. Thank you, Matt.
Yep.
Those are rebounds that started in your driveway back in that small town. We're talking to Maisie Burnham. Last year, at the end of the year, I watched your roster and I looked at you and I said, okay, she scored, I think you had like 19 or 20 in that game against Gonzaga, the WCC final. And I thought, oh, the portal's going to come for her. And it did, didn't it? I mean, did you get offers?
No, honestly, I didn't. And I wasn't really exploring. As you had mentioned, I had previously come from Eastern Washington, I played my freshman year. So, and I've never really been a type of player that wants to move around a lot. I Once I find my home, I kind of want to stay there. And I was really happy with where I was, really happy with my place on the team, really happy with the coaching staff. And I thought, you know, being here for 3 years already, the program has given me such opportunities and deserves my respect and my loyalty for that matter, I guess.
Our listeners are going to fall out of their chairs right now hearing that because we have just been conditioned now to be a little disillusioned with what we're seeing. And it's not really the athletes. You can't really blame the athletes, but you have to kind of go, it's just not what we're used to. Now, I've watched you play. You're a very expressive player on the court. You got a lot of emotion. But yep. I expected like your background to be theater or something in the arts, and then I find out that you already have your degree in accounting and you're going after a master's in finance. Like you let loose on the court though.
Yes. I do, and I think I have to give the credit back to being the youngest sibling. You know, I always kind of had to fight for everything, and of course when I was winning they had to know it, so again I'll credit it to being the youngest sibling.
All right, I love it. If you had to make a pitch to our listeners to come to Saturday's game, it'll be Pacific at 3:30. It's a doubleheader. You can watch the UP men play Lafayette at 1 p.m. and it'll be University of Portland women against Pacific at 3:30 in their WCC opener. Make a pitch, Maisie. What are people going to see who show up?
I think they're going to see a bunch of girls, a program that's really fun to watch basketball-wise, high tempo. We love to share the ball, but you're also just going to see a group of girls that love playing with each other, and I think that's really special, excuse me, and unique in this day and age. And, you know, the more we can get people in the stands, the better environment it will be for everyone. And we like to celebrate, too, so it'll be fun if the more people in the fans.
Maisie Burnham, University of Portland women's basketball. Thanks for giving us some of your time. We'll get you back on.
Thank you so much for having me.
There she goes. There she goes. I got her down for 22-11 on Saturday. She is a really dynamic player, and they play a fast-paced full court. They press, Stephen. They press for 40. It's very exciting to watch. It's good basketball. Press you.
I will say women's basketball has changed a lot the last, you know, couple of years. And like people complain about the men's game all the time, whether it's just shooting threes and stuff. Like women's basketball is more like how people used to, you know, claim they like basketball back in the day. Like that's how they play a lot of the time. But it's very exciting and it's a lot of fun.
Michael Meek at UP. He's got 3 WCC tournament titles in 5 years. This guy, he won at George Fox in the wake of Scott Ruick. He won there as well. He's got 5 OSAA championships at Southridge and 10 seasons there. Now he's got it cooking at UP. Go check them out. Do not wait till March to check out the University of Portland women's basketball program. We got great basketball in this state. Oregon State looks better. Dwayne Tinkle's found an angle. He's got all these, you know, European international players on his roster. Dana Altman's got a great team. Scott Ruick at Oregon State, that guy's going to win and win and win. Not worried about him. Kelly Graves at Oregon, he's got it figured out. And you got Meek. You know, look, I mean, there's some, UP's got it going. Go check them out. Leave it here.
Hi.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I think all interviews have the potential to be really good. University of Portland women's basketball star Maisie Burnham was just on the show. I mentioned Oregon State. Can I just dwell on the Beavers for just a second here? You know, I watched their game over the weekend against UC Irvine, and they gave UC Irvine their first loss of the year. Oregon State is good. Wayne Tinkle, in the wake of having some disappointing seasons, seems to have figured out an angle. For people who don't know this, international players who are in the United States on a visa, student visa, are not eligible for NIL deals. Therefore, you don't have to worry about getting in a bidding war for these players. foreign-born players who are in the U.S., they can get scholarships. They just can't get an NIL deal because those deals would violate their student visa. And so there are some schools that are trying to work to get the law changed, but so far there's not a lot of support for it. I look at Tinkle's roster. He's got a player from Turkey, a player from Iran, a player from Germany, a player from France, England, Canada, Denmark, Lithuania, and France. He's getting some players that, A, he doesn't have to worry about the players getting poached in the portal because they can get a better deal somewhere else. And Oregon State's kind of got an angle. They've gone international. Wayne Tinkle putting some stamps on his passport. And Steven, they're not bad.
They're not. I would say that they, and it's tough to say because that the team went to the Elite Eight back in the COVID year, 2020 or 2021. This team might be better than that team. They're not going to make that type of run, but this is by far their best team since that year, and maybe even more talented than that. Their defense is legitimately good. Tinkle knows how to coach defense, and this team has bought into that. They have some really good athletes. They have some shooters. It's always been the offensive side that's struggled, but they can score the basketball a little bit. I do think that they actually can make a little bit of noise in the West Coast Conference, which is shocking because they're picked towards the bottom, and I agreed with it like going into the season, John, but this might be the most talented roster since that Elite Eight run, and maybe even more talented than that team. They're not going to make the run, but talent-wise, like, if they, you know, they may get some wins over some good teams this year in the West Coast Conference.
They played Oregon early in the year, and they went into overtime against Oregon. The one thing I don't love about the team is fixable, because you're right, they play defense. They very much are coachable. You can tell that they're listening to Wayne Tinkle, and they are giving opponents problems because of that. The one thing they lack, and I think they can figure this out, is I have seen them at the end of games, particularly that Oregon game, when Oregon kind of ratcheted it up on the defensive end of the floor and it got into overtime, they were really struggling to figure out how to get some kind of offense. And Parsifala, who I think is one of their best offensive players inside, there was some foul trouble and they couldn't. So they got to keep their big guys out of foul trouble. And I think the guards need to just get a little better at learning how to close out games. And I think they're getting reps right now doing that because they're winning games.
I think you're right. And looking at KenPom, they're 64th in KenPom, which is actually really good. That's like right on the bubble worthy. So if you can pull off a couple wins, maybe against a Gonzaga, against a St. Mary's, something like that, like they don't have any bad losses. Their losses to North Texas and Oregon. I'm not saying bubble watch, but you could be on the bubble watch if you get a couple good wins and don't lose any bad teams on the West Coast.
I rolled my eyes when Wayne Tinkle said at Media Day, he said, oh, they're underestimating us. Conference, everybody picked him like 7th or 8th. And they're underestimating us. But you know what? I think he knew then they were going to be better than expected. Our 5 at 5 is coming up. Leave it here.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
We have Monday Night Football coming up on 7:50, the game in Portland. Big football game. You were surprised by the Seahawks-Packers game over the weekend. I think on Friday, Steven, you said the Seahawks. Who do you got in these Monday Night Football games tonight? Chicago, Minnesota. Falcons against the Raiders.
I mean, do we really need both these games on? I don't know. I kind of like the Vikings plus the points, to be honest. The Bears plus the points against the Vikings, which is kind of weird because the Bears have been terrible. I just feel like a lot of points, 7 points. And then the other game, I'm going to go with the Falcons in the Desmond Ridder revenge game. And Desmond Ridder is going to be starting for the Raiders. Give me the Falcons strictly because Desmond Ridder is starting.
We're going to see Michael Penix Jr. at some point.
I hope so. Kirk Cousins is zero touchdown, like 8 interceptions in his last 4 games. Like, what are we doing here?
This feels like moment of truth for him. Moment of truth, Cousins. We got the 5 at 5 coming up, and then we'll lead you right into Monday Night Football right here. Steven's ready. I'm ready. Let's do it.
The 5 at 5. Number 1.
Well, John, there's a lot of news going on in the college football world, and not just about the games, but the transfer portal. That's what I want to hit today. Washington State, they're going to lose their quarterback, John Mateer. As he informed head coach Jake Dickert, he will be entering the transfer portal. Stanford quarterback Ashton Daniels, he hit the portal. He has committed to Auburn. So you talked about earlier John Mateer maybe to Auburn, but Daniels has already committed to Auburn and Hugh Freeze. We'll see how that goes. Also, Utah quarterback Isaac Wilson, he was a true freshman, started a few games this year for Utah. He hit the portal, decided to back out of the portal. He will now be heading back to Utah, even though Utah has a commitment from New Mexico quarterback Devin Dampier. So a lot of action going on in the portal right now. I think John Mateer is kind of the big prize. But to me, John, if he doesn't go to Oklahoma, does that say something about what Arbuckle actually thinks of him? Because it seems like a slam dunk for Mateer to go to Oklahoma, follow Arbuckle there. If Arbuckle says, nah, we can go somewhere else, does that kind of say something about Mateer, or am I just reading too much into this?
I'm just kind of wondering, Oregon's stockpiling all this talent. Would the Ducks duplicate their Bo Nix, Dylan Gabriel, would they try to grab Mateer? And what would that say if Oregon went after Mateer? But I think everybody expects it's going to be Oklahoma. I heard that Auburn offered $1.5 million to Mateer, and they're probably not going to get him. You know, as you pointed out, you've got other players getting in the portal and going there. Mateer to Oklahoma seems to make the most sense, seems to be a no-brainer, seems to value his geography. He grew up in Texas. A Texas kid going to Oklahoma makes sense to me. But in this portal era, Steven, I think it comes down to dollars and cents and playing time and fit.
And you heard what Dickert said. You know, guys, backups are getting $500K. So, like, these schools have a lot of money to spend. And, you know, if you can get John Mateer for $2 million and also have Ashton Daniels have two good quarterbacks, why not?
I also think, like, I'm going to pick on Oregon a little bit just because I think it's worth talking about. And Oregon's not the only one that does this, but they're just the example that's right in front of our face. Their quarterback room is layered. It's good. There's a lot of talent in that room. And you know, between the Dante Moore and the Austin Novosad and the, you know, the five-star guy from Hawaii that we just talked to on the show, and that room's going to be loaded. But I had another offensive coordinator at another college say to me, like, you know, those guys are getting money. They're getting $250,000 to $500,000 to go sit for teams, not just Oregon, but for teams, and they're not going to play. And so I kind of wonder when the market will correct and players will go, hey, you know what? I'm going to take less money, but I want to go somewhere where I'm going to play. Because it seems to me that, like, there are some schools like Oregon, and they're not alone, that are just loading up in the quarterback room with guys that probably could be on the field at a lot of other schools. I'll be curious to see how that shakes out.
Number two.
Well, speaking of a school that's looking to get guys is North Carolina, and their head coach Bill Belichick, while he was doing his weekly hit on Pat McAfee's show, John, he has said that numerous players and agents have been reaching out to him and talking to him. He said, quote, "We've been talking to a number of players, and we got guys coming in every day this week. We're selling the program, but a lot of players and agents are coming to us saying that we want to be a part of the program." End quote. Belichick has had some good news so far in the recruiting ranks. He, one of the guys, Bryce Baker, he's a quarterback. He reaffirmed his commitment to North Carolina. He was the number 7 quarterback nationally. Belichick also has gone into the portal and landed his first commit is a center from Holy Cross, Christo Kelly. So Belichick making some moves, and looks like he's already dipping his toes in the college football world.
It's interesting to hear this version of Bill Belichick. This is not on to Cincinnati. This is not grumbly old Bill Belichick. He's got to do a little recruiting. Now, he's saying that he's going to have other people on his staff do the recruiting, but he still is out there. He's still making the appearances. And I'll be really curious to see, between the NIL money and his name, how good Carolina can be. I remain skeptical that this is going to be a home run.
Number three.
Well, Sacramento State, their football program is trying to make a big-time move as they have met with former NFL quarterback Michael Vick about its head coaching position. The school's president did confirm that to Adam Schefter today. He said that he has expressed interest in the position and did meet, Mike Vick did, with the Sacramento State football program, President Luke Wood told ESPN. And Vic has also been interviewing for the Norfolk State head coaching job, which is, of course, by where he grew up. But Sacramento State, interesting because they reportedly have a lot of NIL money that they're really ready to spend. They're going to have a new renovation to their stadium. They've talked about how they wanted to get into the Pac-12 or the Mountain West. And they will be looking to hire a new coach after Andy Thompson, their former head coach, left for an assistant job at Stanford. But Mike Vick, 44 years old, been an analyst with Fox since his retirement. Looks like he's getting a little bit at play here, even with no head coaching experience.
Yeah, Sacramento State's trying to build a stadium. They're talking about a $50 million investment in football. They're talking about trying to matter. Adam Schefter saying that they're in discussions.
Schefter said $50 million in NIL money, too. Is that true? That seems a little high.
That seems high. Seems like that's coming from an agent to me. But the Virginian pilot, which is in Norfolk, is also reporting that Vic has talked to them, and then you've got Sacramento State seems to be talking to everybody. So, they lost Troy Taylor to Stanford. They lost Andy Thompson, who went to Troy Taylor.
Is this a Coach Prime example?
It's a copycat. It's Bill Belichick and Coach Prime. Why not? But I'm not sure if they're going to do it. I don't know. Would you hire Michael Vick? Would that be your guy?
I probably wouldn't have hired Coach Prime or Belichick. So, no, I don't think I would hire Coach Mike Vick either. Like, I feel like at some point you still do need some coaching chops. And with no coaching experience, it's just hard to go all in.
It's important to know, Joe Davidson, who is, I should get him on the show. He's a friend of this show. He's been on before. He covers Sacramento State for the SAC B. He says the $50 million is contingent on Sac State becoming a Pac-12 entry. So that $50 million of NIL money is built on a promise that's probably not going to come through. Like, I sat with Teresa Gold, the Pac-12 commissioner, a couple of weeks ago in Salem, and she basically said no FCS schools. Like, she's like, no, that's not what they're thinking. And Sacramento State would not be ready for the Pac-12 for several years. So they'd have to build the stadium. They're projecting that, I guess.
Number four.
Well, the annual Patrick Mahomes leg injury happened last week, John. He has a high ankle sprain that the Chiefs say they don't think is that bad, according to Adam Schefter. But Mahomes did leave the game against the Browns, and they were a little worried on Sunday in their win over Cleveland. Now, the Chiefs are in a weird spot here as they have a game on Christmas Day as well. They'll be completing the stretch of 3 games in 11 days with Patrick Mahomes with that ankle injury. He may not play, but it seems like this happens every year with Mahomes. Like, something happens to his leg, he leaves a game, and he comes back and he's Superman and wins the Super Bowl. So I think this is just kind of, annual Patrick Mahomes things.
That was a 6-loss team last year that was in a tailspin in the middle of the season, lost to the Raiders, and they get him right when it counts. Question is, will the NFL be happy if the Chiefs don't play him on Christmas Day? Is it possible he doesn't play? Keep an eye.
Number five.
And we got doubleheader Monday Night Football, John. I gave my picks. Who do you like? I like the Bears plus the points. I like the Falcons laying the points. It's got Falcons taking on the Raiders, Bears taking on the Vikings. Who do you got?
I'll go the opposite. I'll do what George Costanza would do in this situation.
As you should.
The Minnesota Vikings are going to roll over a bad Chicago team, and then give me the 2-11. Give me the 6-7 Falcons against the 2-11 Raiders. We shall see. Michael Penix get on the field. That's the big question. All right, we're back tomorrow with another great show. On Thursday, I hope you're here for it. If you have not seen the movie The Best Christmas Pageant Ever, go out and see it or get it on Amazon. The producer of that movie will be joining us on Thursday. We're going to talk about movies, sports movies, and other stuff on Thursday's show. We'll lead you right into your college football playoff and bowl games as well this week.